Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, March 23rd, 2008, and this is show number 141. Hey, I got a question for you. How come nobody, not even QA Director Steve or Hanabob, who's giving him a run for his money, noticed that I said it was show number 141 last week, when in actuality it was only show number 140? Ha! Got to it before you did. Well, I guess I got ahead of myself for some reason. I don't know, it's like I've been telling everyone I'm 50 when I'm actually only 49. Somehow 50 sounds cooler to me. 49 sounds like you're in denial, and I plan on embracing every year as it comes. Well, I got to tell you guys, I think I may be burning this podcasting candle at both ends these days, and perhaps in the middle, and maybe a little more on the left-hand side, too. So get this. On Thursday, I was on the Mac Roundtable again, which was so much fun. We had Don McAllister, Victor Cajiao, Katie Floyd, and Tim Verporten on the show. I think it was one of our best. I feel like we're really getting our groove now, I think. Anyway, the show's actually already posted, so you can head on over to macroundtable.com and check that out. So that was Thursday. Then on Friday, I co-hosted the Views from the Coop podcast with Paige Isinger and Kim Beasley. You know I love Paige. You remember she did that book review of Design Accessible Websites? Well, I'd never even virtually met Kim before, so it was fun finally getting to chat with her, too. Had talked about her through Paige a bunch of times. Check out this podcast if you haven't already. It's lively and unpredictable, and it's recorded live on Blog Talk Radio, so you can even join in and participate if you want to. It's over at viewsfromthecoop.com. All right, that was Thursday and Friday. Are you tired yet? Well, let's keep going. On Saturday, I was on an expert panel at the first Mac Day LA event. This was really fun. It was put on by Deb Shadovitz, who was responsible for the Mac Mingle up at Macworld that I enjoyed so much. She does a great job at these events, pulling together a ludicrous number of details to make it really enjoyable for the audience. We had table talks during breakfast where I hosted a table talking about freeware, shareware, and open source tools. Duh. Of course that's what I was going to talk about. There was a woman there. I wish I'd gotten her email address. She was trying to figure out how to get her AppleWorks databases converted into something that would run under Leopard. I suggested to her that she could probably export them as a comma-separated values file, .csv, and then maybe the free and open source software NeoOffice could read it into the base program. When I got home, I found on the NeoWiki website some specific instructions on ways to do this. I put a link in the show notes for her just in case she's listening. There was a nice couple there who were really interested in photography and creating newsletters. There were three educators who had great stories to tell about how the kids teach them about technology, and they had some interesting tool questions as well. Greg Taylor was one of the educators, and he had some great insight into tools that I really enjoyed. It was really fun when I found out he was already a listener to my podcast. I might have been pushing my business cards pretty hard that day. And anyway, I told him that I think he really should be contributing to the show because he's got great tool knowledge. He was really, really good. Well, I should have mentioned that the Mac Day LA event took place on the CBS studio lots, which was really cool. We parked on Gilligan's Island Road, then we took a left over out of Gunsmoke, went past the bungalows where the actors on Samantha Who hang out. We saw set designs being rolled around. Very cool. It was kind of funny. We didn't see anybody famous on the lot, but two of the guys I met at the Mac Day LA event actually were actors. One guy was really familiar. He was he played a doctor on Third Rock from the Sun. I got to look him up and get his name because he didn't give me his card, but of course I forced him to take mine. And another guy who played a rabbi on Seinfeld. So he was there with his son, and the two of them seemed to be having a really good time. He's going to start a podcast soon, and I hope we get to hear from him. After breakfast was when we actually had the expert panel, where they did Q&A with Bruce Brown, who is a Mac computer consultant in the LA area, and Mark Cartman, who is a senior consultant on all things Macintosh. I put both of their email addresses in my show notes in case you need some hands-on help. These guys are both really, really good. They were great on the panel, and they have a deep understanding of how things work and were really helpful to the audience. I was honored to be on the panel with them. The only problem I had with the Q&A was that we kept running out of time and had to cut off the questions. But I guess that's what you want, leave your audience wanting, right? All right, so you think I'm exhausted already for one weekend? I've already done the Mac Roundtable, Views from the Coop, the Mac LA event. But hey, all I've got left for the weekend is my podcast and co-hosting the Typical Mac User podcast with Victor Hahiao over on TalkShoe. I'll be doing that after the show, after I finish recording this tonight. So if you have time to head on over, well, you're probably listening to this too late, but maybe next time. Anyway, I always have a great time with Victor, really enjoy working with him. I got to tell you, one of the highlights of the Mac Day LA event was getting to meet the love of his life, Mary, at the show. I thought I'd be tired, but I'm all pumped up after all this podcasting. Well, hey, let's dig into this show. Friend of the show, Margaret, wrote in with a really interesting observation about last week's show. Here's what she wrote. I sure hope Crazy James didn't tune into your 16 March podcast. After you explained to him that you never go out for people you even like, you proceeded in the same podcast to mention how you drove 100 plus miles to help a friend buy a MacBook Pro, photographed a listener's garden, and had to close out the show because you were off to a party. I laugh so hard. Of course, in your defense, you do love photography and Macs, so that can be explained. But the party? The party. It was a family obligation. Yeah, that's it. It's a family obligation. See, as a family, we're going on a cruise to Mexico with a bunch of friends, and we needed to have a pre-party to celebrate the future fun, see? I don't remember if I told you about this, but I bought this awesome pair of shorts in Sedona. We packed assuming it would be really, really cold there, but when we arrived, it was like 65 degrees out. We went to this store called Beals, which can best be described as maybe an outlet store for Kmart. It was just horrid. Anyway, I found this awesome pair of shorts there. They're teal and lime green plaid Bermuda shorts. While I clearly made a fashion statement in Sedona, you can imagine my delight when I realized those would be the perfect shorts to wear for the pre-Mexico party. I don't want to just be a tease here, so I put a photo of me in these lovely shorts in the show notes so you can see how awesome they are. Do you think I distracted enough that James didn't notice that whole thing? Okay, keeping going. Let's start in with some actual tools, finally. I have a quick update on the product Pixelmator. I reviewed this excellent image editor back on show number 117, and that was back in October of 2007. I really liked Pixelmator, but there was one thing that kept me from using it instead of Photoshop Elements. The thing that I was looking for was it didn't have the ability to crop to a specific size, say constraining it to 4x6, for example. Now my daughter's trying to convince me that since we never print anything anymore, I should break out of that constraint, but I'm just not ready for that much change yet. In any case, over the last 6 months, I keep checking in on Pixelmator from time to time, mostly when I didn't want to wait the interminable length of time it takes for Photoshop Elements to open up. This week I popped it open and there was an update, and now it has constrained cropping. It's funny that I was so obsessed on this one point, though, because Pixelmator has always had some outstanding attributes. The most impressive feature is that it uses core image technology, which from a layman's perspective means that you get graphics rendering performance that's outstanding. For example, instead of watching a progress meter as your Mac renders a Gaussian blur, you see the effects real-time in the blur tool. Over in Photoshop Elements, you can tell it to do a blur, and it sort of kind of does it in a little preview window, but as soon as you hit OK, you get to see the spinning pizza ball of death or spinning away while it does the rendering. In Pixelmator, every time you hit OK, boom, you've got it completely done. So that's really, really cool. The same kind of thing happens if you took a picture. Let's say you got a picture that's a little crooked and you want to straighten it up, or your listener James and it's straight and you want to make it crooked. Well, as you change the angle to rotate it, it shows you real time how it looks, so you can adjust until it's just perfect. Pixelmator is a beautiful piece of software, and for $59, it's a great price for a highly capable and fast image editor. Go check it out at pixelmator.com. Back in February, I told you about a cool site called KeyXL, where you can find keyboard shortcuts for a whole slew of applications, both Windows and Mac. Not to take anything away from KeyXL, but I found another site that provides the same service. All Hotkeys at allhotkeys.com says, "We're here to help you increase work speed. Want to know how exactly we're going to do that? Hotkeys. They're also called keyboard shortcuts or magic keys. All this means one thing. Using hotkeys will increase the speed of your work." While Hotkeys has browsers, Microsoft applications, Apple applications like iLife, Google tools like Calendar and Writely, they call it XNix, which is a way of saying like Unix, Linux kind of shortcuts, for Bash and KDE and GNOME, and even more. And they've even got games in there like World of Warcraft and Heroes of Might and Magic. And even a broad category called Other. Other's a huge category. It includes Eudora, SQL, Lotus Notes, Oracle and Yahoo, Mail and Photoshop. Goes on and on. There's a ton of applications in there. If you're an efficiency nut like me and you want a nicely organized site for looking up hotkeys, you will love AllHotkeys. As many of you know, I'm kind of particular about my car. I wash it weekly, I dust it midweek many times, and I wax it like 3 or 4 times a year. I believe that if you take care of your car, you'll enjoy your car more during its life with you. It turns out that time that it makes you happy will actually be longer if you've taken good care of it, and you're going to get better resale value when you finally can't stand it and have to have a new car. But it's not all about making it look good with washing and waxing. You have to take care of the engine, too. Since we have Hondas and Acuras in our fleet, we have the luxury of having Honda Bob drive to our house whenever we're due for a service, or in the really unlikely event that we actually need something repaired. Honda Bob comes out and makes sure all the belts and fluids and all that icky little greasy nonsense are clean and well-maintained. And because of that, we've always had great success with our cars. We sell them for a ton of money when we're finally done with them. In fact, we've actually had people put themselves on a waiting list with us to buy one of our hand-me-downs. If you're lucky enough to live in the LA or Orange County areas and you'd like this same in-home care for your Honda or Acura, give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hjabob@aol.com. HEA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide.
G'day, Al. I'm not going to tell you who this is, because if you don't recognize me, well, I'll have to start sending voicemails to Victor or Tim or Ken. They're lovely boys. This is not the review of beautiful Dorina that I promised you, and I have yet to take a photo of me in the Macquarie house with no silicast because I've been crook. Which is Oz speak for sick. I've had a shocking bout of the flu. Well, actually, I have had the flu, but basically, I'm slack. Jeez, woman, stop nagging me. I thought I'd tell the good citizens of Nosilla Land why I bought an iPod Touch and didn't keep waiting for the Australian release of the iPhone. A couple of months ago, a young woman at work bought in an iPhone that she'd a hacked iPhone that she'd bought on eBay. And the first time I touched an iPhone, which is a lovely play on words, I think, I was utterly transfixed with Apple lust. But I had to think seriously about how I would use the iPhone. Now, I need a phone in my pocket at all times, and to carry a $1,000 phone around when you're a commercial cleaner. Now, I love my job, but it's very hard, very physical, and very dirty work. So that was a strike against the iPhone. And then when Bart was telling us about the ridiculous prices and data plans and, well, the total rip-off, the Irish plans for the iPhone, I thought it could only be as bad in Australia. So I bought an iPod Touch, and I absolutely adore it. I can't believe the clarity of the screen, how easy it is to read my mail on it, how easy it is to browse the net. A superb Mac experience. And I think I have an advantage in that I have never been a touch typist. I've always been a hunt and peck. So even typing on the iPhone, I don't find any slower than my usual speed. And I thought I'd share a little trick I discovered today, in case anyone doesn't know. You know about accents, those little squiggly things that are on the top of a letter or below a letter? Well, on the iTouch keyboard, if you press the C and click and hold the C, a drop-down menu will appear. Well, it's not actually a drop-down menu because it appears to the side, but it will have all the applicable accents, and you pick one, and bingo. When Haley brought her hacked iPhone into work, I'm in hospitality, so when the waiting staff knock off, they sit around and have a drink, and I usually join them. Now, there must have been a dozen people at this table, and within seconds, we were all fighting to get a hold of this iPhone. Now, none of these people have seen the need to talk to me about Macs. I mean, everybody in the building knows what a Mac geek I am. Hard not to know. I'm not quiet about it. But within minutes of touching the iPhone, three of them are trying to talk to me about Macs. And in fact, Hayley told me that within a week of having the iPhone, she knew her next computer would be a Mac. So the halo effect of the iPhone and the iPod Touch is just going to be extraordinary, I think. Now, in my dear little town of Slobart, there isn't a lot of free Wi-Fi around, but I discovered yesterday that my local pub has opened up his network to all comers. So that's some... he's going to see a lot more of me. But even just having it around the house, connected up to my wireless network, I am just purely and simply loving the iPod Touch. So to all the people that are waiting for iPhones to come to their particular country, I wouldn't bother. Just go and get a Touch. Catch us later.
Well, thanks, Rose. I love your style of explaining things. I can't believe, though, that you would even suggest that you would cheat on me with Tim or Victor or Ken. Lovely boys may they be. Well, it's great that you found free Wi-Fi at your local pub, but now you're going to have a drunk Mac fanatic running around there bothering everybody. Sounds like fun. In any case, nice review. I bet that'll help some people get off the fence. That's US speak for make a decision, by the way. Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from bartbouchatz.ie. How you doing today, Bart?
I'm doing just fine. Yourself, Allison?
Oh, I'm doing okay. Like I said, I ran out of allergy medication, so I'm coughing a little bit, but that's what mute buttons are for, right?
Indeed. I thought allergies made you sneeze.
Well, in my case, it doesn't, but it just makes me do a really annoying little... People call me and say it's a hairball I've got going sometimes.
You've never read the Harry Potter books, have you?
Yeah. Why?
A certain Dolores Umbridge.
I wonder if that's only in the British version. I'm not sure I read that part.
No, she must have her little cough. She has it in the film as well.
Wow, I don't remember that. Well, I don't read very carefully and I can't remember anything. So actually, I had a terrible example of that this week. A guy asked me to be his friend on Facebook, and I wrote back and I said, do I know you? And he says, well, do you work at such and such a place? And I said, yes. And I was still confused where I met him. I had met him that day. I already couldn't remember.
Yeah, I'm terrible with names. There's people I technically know for years, and I know their faces. I know exactly how I know them. I know exactly from where I know them. I could have great big long conversations about them. No idea what their names are.
I had that problem with a woman at the gym that, I mean, I have actually stayed in her condo in Hawaii. I've known her for 8 years. She's one of my best friends. Any day of the week, I can look at her and have no idea what her name is. Well, hey, I wanted to talk a little bit about grammar today. So Bart put up some photos in a particular topic on his blog this last week, and I went in and I corrected his grammar. And we're going to use a different example, actually, to explain what happened here. So there's a grammar rule that says that if you're using an acronym that starts with a vowel sound, even though the letter is a consonant, you're supposed to put an in front of it instead of H. I mean, an instead of A. So the example I like to use a long time, I used to work with some software called MSC Nastran, and you're supposed to say an MSC Nastran model, where not a MSC Nastran, because that sounds wrong, so a MSC. So if you were to say an HTML page, you would say an HTML page. Well, the word Bart was using started with an H, and but he was saying a. So I corrected him, and I said it really should be an HTML or whatever the example would be. So he didn't write back, and I thought, wow, did I offend or bore him to tears? It could have gone either way. And Bart, you wrote back and said you just didn't agree with me, as I recall.
Well, I was thinking about it, and I had meant to do some sort of research to see whether this was an Hiberno-English thing or an everyone on this side of the Atlantic thing, but I never did get around to that. But I know for a fact that in Ireland, we don't pronounce our H's as H's. So for us, HTML is HTML. So it doesn't start with a vowel sound, so we don't put an in front of it, we put an A. So a HTML page.
Now, this sounds perfectly obvious to the audience why there should have been no confusion, but what you need to realize as an audience member here is we had this conversation in text. We were chatting, and we couldn't figure out why we both thought we were right until we realized that the word H in English or in American English is a very hard H sound. It starts with like the letter A-I-T-C-H. But as you can hear Bart pronouncing it, it's a little different. It starts with a consonant, with H.
Yeah, so I write the way I talk, and you read the way you talk. Therefore, no matter what we do, one of us is going to always think it's wrong.
I think it's a miracle that we ever figured this out. And, you know, it doesn't sound nearly as interesting as it seemed to me when we were talking about it in text. But I thought it was interesting from a cultural standpoint, you know, across the continents here to try to understand each other. It was an eye-opener for me anyway.
Yeah, because in theory we both speak English, but it's quite quite different English, I think.
Well, yeah, and Rose thinks she speaks English, but I can't understand a word she says, you know.
Yeah, and then you have the people in South Africa who technically speak English, and that's a whole other kettle of fish.
Well, we were going to talk about something technical here, weren't we?
We were, and it was HDR photography, hence we actually had this whole big conversation in the first place.
HDR.
I kept on going on about... a HDR this and a HDR that, and you were going, no, an HDR, and I was going, no, a HDR, and anyway.
So what is HDR anyway?
Well, it stands for high dynamic range. So if you imagine, but when I first started doing photography with a digital camera, I noticed that the camera could deal with much less of a range of brightnesses than my eye could. So I would look at something and say, oh, that looks cool. Take a shot, and it would look absolutely terrible because all the shadow bits would be drowned out. And if I tried to up the exposure anymore, I'd just blow out all the highlights. So no matter what I did, it would look fine with my eye, but I couldn't get the digital camera to pick it up. And the reason for that, I later found, is that cameras have a very low dynamic range. So there's a very small range of brightnesses they can capture at the same time.
So was that different with digital than with analog film?
Well, I'm not 100% sure, but I never noticed it with analog film. I could go out with my old film camera and snap away and I never remember looking at the pixel going, God, that's so different to what I see. But the very, very first day I had my D40, I noticed it because I got out to play with it after work. So it was a summer evening with long shadows. And immediately, as soon as I got home, I was like, oh, that's most disappointing.
So maybe, what do you do about it?
Well, you can either very carefully, you know, not shoot things that have a high dynamic range and then the problem simply ceases to exist. But I tend to not do that because I like to shoot what I want to shoot, not what the camera can shoot. And so there's another way you can cheat. Well, it's not cheating, I suppose. You help the camera. So you don't take one shot because one shot has a very small dynamic range. So you take multiple shots. So the first you take one shot in the middle and then you overexpose one and underexpose one. And then if you combine those three together, you have a much higher dynamic range.
Well, that's got to be difficult, stitching those photos together. You have to cut little sections out and paste them in, or how do you do that?
Okay, well, actually sticking it together is very straightforward because what you actually end up doing is making a file that can represent more information than you can see. So that's the first step, and we'll stick to that step for now because the second step is actually making it into something we can see, which is kind of useful because what's the point of a photograph that has all the information but you can't actually see it?
Okay.
So the first thing you have to bear in mind is that you should probably use a tripod for this because otherwise you're going to have an awful lot of fun trying to line everything up. And if you don't line it up, you're going to end up with one pure mess. Although it might count as modern art, but it certainly ain't going to be a photograph.
Now, this mostly occurs in scenery kind of things, right? You're not as likely to try to do this with a human or kids or dogs or anything like that, right?
Unless you particularly insisted on taking a photograph of someone while they had their back to the sun. So that you'd be shooting straight into the sun. There's no other reason you'd ever want to do HDR in a portrait. You know, there'd have to be some reason that you wanted to take them with a really, really bright background or a really, really dark background, and you still insisted on getting the detail on both them and the background.
It'd be a lot easier to just move the person, right?
Yeah, or move yourself, you know, by 180 degrees and take them from the other side.
Right.
Yeah, so it's usually for landscapes and still lifes of some sort, which is good because they tend not to move. Because if it's something that moves, you're in trouble. Which means on a windy day with clouds that are moving, you're going to have trouble straight off, and this probably isn't going to work. Now, some cameras help you out on this, some shiny modern cameras, and they'll actually do exposure bracketing automatically. So you simply tell the camera, whenever I click the button once, I want you to take 3 pictures, or 5 pictures, or 7 pictures, centered on what I'm actually taking. So that means it can do it really, really quick. So even if there's a bit of movement, you know, it doesn't matter half as much because the camera's doing it really quickly. Fortunately, the Nikon D40 that you and I have doesn't have that lovely feature. So we have to set the thing to aperture priority, line up our shot using the tripod, get it right, take a shot, hold down the compensation button, which is a little plus minus button, turn the little thumb screw 3 clicks to the left, take another shot, hold down the compensation button, turn the little thing 6 clicks to the right, take another shot, hold down the compensation thing and put it back to zero. That's if you do a 3-picture HDR, but if the range is even bigger, you have to keep bracketing. So you look at the outcome you get, and as long as the shadows are still not don't have detail and the highlights are still blown out, you keep bracketing. So you start one in the middle and one each side, then a compensation of 2, then a compensation of 3. At that stage, that's probably as far as you're going to go.
3 clicks is changing the f-stop how much?
It's changing the exposure compensation by 1.
Okay.
So if you click it once, you get 0.3. If you click it twice, you get 0.6. And if you click it a third time, you get 1.
Okay.
So you do it on 0, plus 1, minus 1, plus 2, minus 2. And if you really, really have to, plus 3, minus 3. And that's as far as... Actually, you can go as far as plus 5, minus 5 on the D40.
And you might come out with a picture that even your eye could never have seen if you did that, I would expect.
Oh, yeah. Most certainly. And you can actually have great fun. The most fun I had with this is... There's a graveyard on the campus of the old university in Maynooth, which has an sort of an avenue of yew trees that have been carved into a sort of a pointy Gothic arch, and they lead up to a little stone arch, and clean through the arch you can see a high cross. So in the foreground you have a nice gate, and then you have this massive, long, and very dark avenue because it's completely covered in yew trees, then this nice stone gate with a little statue on top of it, and then through that, in the middle of broad daylight, a big cross. The dynamic range there is insane.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a really nice view. So that one took 7 bracketed exposures to get. I have that one on my website. But it worked, and it was really nice. So anyway, so once you've taken your bracketed shots on your tripod, or if you're lucky and they have a camera that does it automatically, you can do it with a steady hand. The next step is you need some sort of software to turn, you know, 3 or 5 or 7 into 1, because you can't really do much with all those pictures. And if you have Photoshop, you can get a plugin to do it, the name of which escapes me. It's basically, they did an entire episode of This Week in Photography where they went through all the different software options. I don't have Photoshop. I'm not made of money. Photoshop costs more than my camera costs. So
right.
Puts it into perspective.
I didn't even think about that. You're right.
Yeah, it is. So instead, I went for the cheapest option that the guys in TWIP suggested, which is a $19.50, I think. It's less than $20 anyway. A little piece of software called Bracketeer, because they're exposure brackets, so Bracketeer. And Bracketeer's cool. So you fire it up, and it gives you, it gives you some blank spots and then a preview window, and you literally drag and drop in your 7 files. Then it'll give you a preview of what they look like as a HDR. And they won't, even with the tripod, mine weren't perfectly lined up, because the act of actually clicking that wheel 3 times in each direction and stuff actually moved things a little bit. So it has a button called auto align, and if they're anywhere close, auto align is smart enough to figure it out, and then it lines them up perfectly. So you click on the auto align button, and then you click on the infuse it with an exclamation mark button, and out will pop a TIFF file that has all the information in the one file.
Is this the file you're saying we can't see, though?
We sort of can, because Bracketeer does half of step 2. So step 1 is get it all into one file, and step 2 is the hard part. It's called tonal mapping. And what you basically do is the bits of the image that are overexposed, you turn down the highlights massively so the detail comes back, and the bits of the image that are underexposed, you turn up the low ranges, so the shadows, really high until you see the detail again. And because it's a HDR image, the detail is actually there to be seen. Whereas if you do that with a regular exposure and you try to turn up these sliders, nothing's going to happen because the information isn't there. So if you really want to play with an HDR to really understand how much information is there, if you take just the exposure slider and you slide it the whole way down, you'll see that it still has detail in the very darkest shadows. And if you slide it the whole way up, you see it still has detail in the very brightest highlights. But there's nowhere you can put that exposure slider that you'll see everything at once.
I see.
Okay, so that's what the tonal mapping does. So it treats different bits of the image differently depending on whether it's a bright bit, a medium bit, or a dark bit. So it works on highlights, which are bright bits, mid-tones, which are the normal bits, and shadows, which are the dark bits. And you adjust those 3 separately, basically.
Now, when you're in Bracketeer and you're doing these sliders and messing around with this, can you see real-time what's going on?
Right. You see, you don't do this in Bracketeer.
Oh.
Right? Bracketeer makes a guess, and you don't really have any significant control over the guess. Bracketeer uses an algorithm to do its best, and it will produce something that's passable. In fact, sometimes it can even be quite good. So then you have this TIFF file that's okay. It's not brilliant, but it's okay, and it has all the information in there.
Wait, is it in layers?
I don't like... No. It's one TIFF file. That information is encoded in that file.
Okay.
Now, I don't like TIFF files because they're bloody huge.
Yeah.
So I run it through Preview to spit it back out to a really high-quality JPEG. And I keep my JPEGs at really good quality so that I don't lose any detail. But they're still only 5 megs, whereas the TIFF was 25 megs. So it's a fifth the size. We're still going good. So then iPhoto comes in, because I think iPhoto's editing is so simple yet so effective. Like, it doesn't give you many sliders, but the ones it gives you are doing really powerful stuff. So I import the photo into iPhoto, and then first thing is HDRs tend to wash out the colors a little. So the first thing I usually do is click on the Enhance button, and the Enhance button in iPhoto, I have no idea what voodoo it does, but it generally is cool.
Hmm.
Right, it generally does a really good job. If it doesn't, Apple Z, undo and skip that step. But if it improves the image, stick with it. And then click on the Adjust button and it brings up your Adjust palette. And basically you have 3 sliders now that you care about. The first thing you'd want to get right is get the mid-tones where you want them. So you do that with the exposure slider. So that basically makes the whole picture brighter and darker. And you probably won't have to tweak this much. Then the next thing you want to do is brighten up the shadows. So that's with a slider called Shadows. And as you slide it, you'll just see the detail come out. And if you really go mad, you'll end up with an image that shows more detail than the human eye could possibly see, because with those 7 brackets, you have more detail than the eye could possibly see, and it starts to look really surreal. And
But you might want that if you want to make a crazy.
You may want that, right? You may want that, but you probably don't. So you slide it until it looks natural. And then the next thing you want to do is darken the bits that are too bright, which are the highlights. And so the slider above the shadow slider is called the highlight slider. And as you slide it, you'll see the bright bits begin to darken down and all the detail come out in them. And you slide that down until it looks natural, like the human eye would see it. And then you have a shot, which is simply physically impossible to do without taking multiple exposures. Or you can go mad and you can slide that slider too far as well. And at that stage, you end up with something insanely psychedelic looking. You can always tell if someone's a little HDR happy because halos begin to appear around all the bright bits.
Ooh.
You see that a lot on really, you know, if you go to Wikipedia and type in HDR, they seem to think that the only type of HDR is insane psychedelic HDR. And you'll see that every building has this halo around it and every tree has this halo around it. And you just see all these halos everywhere. And halos are a sure sign that someone's gone HDR mad and taken it too far.
So is that something you actually look for when you're doing it, to make sure you're not pushing it too far?
Yeah, as soon as I see halos coming, I was like, okay, time to go back a little with all my sliders. And literally, if you take the shadow and the highlights back, those halos will disappear. That's just, once you start pushing things beyond what the eye can see, those halos start to show up all over the place.
I see. Looks like
It's actually, yeah, you can do things, you can break the rules. Like, you know the way you're old, I don't know about you, but when I grew up shooting with actual SLR cameras, where it cost money to develop a shot and it cost money to get film and stuff, and if my father saw me shooting into the sun, he'd give me a clip around the ear and say, stop that, you're wasting your money. Well, yeah, back to the sun, now take the picture. Yeah, that was always his thing. You know, you should feel the sun on the back of your head and then you're fine.
Oh,
and if you don't, if you feel it in your face, you're in trouble. And he's right, of course, because if you take an ordinary SLR camera and shoot into the sun, you're not going to see very much because the dynamic range goes through the roof and even film can't deal with it. And with a DSLR, you get the same, only worse, because it has an even lower dynamic range.
I have noticed that in sunset shots, sometimes you'll get where it's just blown out into these almost chunks of blown out color.
Yeah, that's, you're just basically going beyond what the camera can handle, and you end up blowing out the highlights, blacking out the shadows, and you just get a mess, really. But with HDR, you can break those rules because you simply keep bracketing exposures till you have detail at all the levels. And then stick them together, tonal map up till you're happy, and you're done.
And no clipping
there's
about
this lovely
the ears.
Little, and no clipping about the ears. Well, I've grown up now. I can't reach. Actually, that's not true. We're about the same height. But anyway, there's this lovely church. It's a ruin of a church. It was once a lovely church near where I live. There's a certain photo I've always wanted to take because it's just a certain angle where you have the tower and the ruins and the gravestones, and it just looks lovely. But the reality is that it's always against the sun because the way it's pointing. You're basically standing on the north looking towards the south. So all day long, the sun is somewhere in your face. And you simply, I could just never get the shot. Well, I got it now.
So one of the things I like that you did was you put in your blog, you put in photos of the of that church you were just talking about, and you show how a normal picture of it was taken, where you don't get any details out of the shadows, and then how with a HDR compensation you can actually get the entire detail, and you gave us a photo of that. You also showed some screenshots of the way Bracketeer works with the photo and the adjustment menu you were talking about, and that wonderful walkway with the trees with the cross at the end.
Yeah, actually, that church is a different church, actually.
Oh, it is? Oh.
That church you can get if you get up early in the morning, which I unfortunately never do. So technically, for me, it's just as unattainable because I don't do mornings. But that one, it's beautifully lit up in the evening, but there's another building in front of it that always begins to cast a shadow. So there's probably a gap of an hour or so where there isn't a shadow cast and the thing is properly lit up. And I just never seem to make that gap.
Right.
So I always have a shadow somewhere. It shows basically how you lose the base, and then with the HDR, you don't. You have the detail in the shadows and out of the shadows.
Yeah, I really like that shot, and that's a great illustration of what you can do there. I did want to make a couple of points about Bracketeer. I went over and looked at the website at PangeaSoft.net while you were talking. It's $29.95 now, but you also get Pano Previewer with it. So I don't know if they changed the price when they added Pano Previewer to it.
I got it last week with Pano Previewer for less than $20.
Huh. Well, the site says $29.95. Maybe they got famous because of This Week in Photography and your blog, and that's how they went up. I don't know.
Possible. That, or I've just managed to transpose in my head the euro cost and the dollar cost, because I'm pretty sure $30 translates to 20 euro these days, isn't it?
Actually, I think it's closer to 15.
Just
it's getting
15.
Worse and worse.
Actually, hang on. No, I have the receipt here in front of me that I printed off from their website. Bracketeer, quantity 1, unit price $19.95.
Wow, so they did raise the price in a week. Interesting.
They did, and I bought it on the 16th of the 3rd at 1:06 p.m.
Well, I guess you can't blame them. If it's a good application, people are buying it. But it is $29.95 now. But the other thing I want to give you a hard time for is this is only a GUI for Enfuse, which is a command line freeware utility. And you're the command line guy. Why aren't you doing it in there?
I didn't know that. I have to say the auto align is the key thing for me. Because even with the tripod, not a single set of brackets, even of just 3 shots, not a single set were perfectly aligned.
So
it actually gives you 2 previews. So it gives you a big preview, which is quite small. A full preview, we'll call it, which is still quite small. And then you can click in that, and it shows you a really detailed, smaller preview. And if you have something, you know, which has like a railing or something, you click on that railing and you look in the small preview, it's never perfectly aligned until you click that auto align button, and then it just snaps in perfectly.
Wow. I should stick in my show notes. I took a picture in Italy in San Gimignano. There was a beautiful wall that was really, really cool brick, and the sky behind it was just spectacular. I took a picture. Of course, the sky was blown out, or the exposure on the wall was all wrong. So I took two photos, exposing on the wall and then exposing on the sky, and trying to line them up exactly. And then I put them in Photoshop, and I spent 11 hours trying to get the two together. And I think I did pretty well, but it was a lot harder than what you describe here. Sounds like this would be pretty easy.
Yeah, and this can basically, the technique you describe works very well for something where there's a really clear division between the bright bit and the unbright bit. And so you take 2 exposures and you have everything. So if you can imagine, say, shooting through an archway or something, you'd have 1 exposure where the arch is properly exposed and 1 where the through is properly exposed.
Right.
But once you have something with any more than 2, that technique becomes really, really difficult, because then you're taking 3 and getting those 3 lined up and then choosing which layers to cut through where. And you can just, you know, it took you quite a while to do 2.
Right.
Yeah.
That would be insane. And it was only because it was so sharply different, too, that I was able to do like the magic selection tool in Photoshop Elements and that kind of thing. So I like this subject because it was a way to combine our fun with our Nikon D40 cameras, or Nikon, as you say, and some software tools. So that's always fun, right?
Yeah, and yeah, is it Nikon or is it Nikon? No one's ever been able to tell me. That's homework for the listeners.
I'm afraid that might be a dialect thing as well, because I've never heard it called Nikon.
Yeah, but there must be, like, it's from Japan, isn't it?
That's true.
So, Japanese listeners, please tell us what it is, although we're probably both wrong.
Yeah, right. It's a completely other pronunciation. So we should yes, I would like an email from a Japanese listener telling us how it's pronounced.
Preferably with audio clip.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Don't do it in text. That would be hard. All right, Bart. Well, any more on that subject, or have we worked that one to death too?
I think we've hit the nail on the head. So Bracketeer, good software, but they're out to make a quick buck by lumping up the price of the software by a tenner in a week. But it's still good software, and to be honest, it is actually worth the $30. Now, if they go up much more, I wouldn't suggest you buy it, because there's another one that's way more powerful for $100, the name of which escapes me, but it's on that episode of This Week in Photography. So maybe you should stick a link to that episode of This Week in Photography into the show notes. What do you think?
Yeah, no problem. You said that was show number 9, right?
Yes, it was. It's a video show, so it's not an audio show. And they basically do a screencast showing you how to use Photoshop, how to use Bracketeer, and how to use the other one whose name now escapes me. And they talk through it, and they explain the price difference, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, great. Well, Bart, thank you for your review on that. That was a lot of fun, and I bet some people are going to go off and play with their cameras and do even more interesting things now.
I hope so. I mean, the only reason I got into the HDR stuff now is because This Week in Photography put out a user challenge where the subject was HDR, and I went, oh, I've got to figure out how to do that. And I have to say, I had great fun doing it last weekend.
Well, that's neat. And you actually got sunshine too, which was handy.
Yeah, and highly unusual. So I was very, very lucky, because I had high hopes myself and a friend. He'd recently bought a Nikon D80. And the two of us have been meaning to go out together for ages to sort of compare and contrast in the field. And just looking out the window, and the weather's crap. And it was crap yesterday, and the forecast for tomorrow is crap. And for the day after is, believe it or not, crap.
All right. Well, on that note, I think I'm going to cut us off, Bart.
Okie dokie. Until next time, happy computing.
Well, you heard your homework assignment, kids. It's time to find us a translation or a pronunciation, I should say, of Nikon, or is it Nikon, or is it some third way to say that word in Japanese? Well, I'm going to go on a rant here, and it's about something simply awful that Apple did this week. On my Windows Vista laptop at work, I have iTunes and QuickTime loaded. On Thursday morning, an Apple software update popped up. However, it was not an update. It was an offer to install Safari 3 disguised as an update. I was livid. I do not have Safari loaded on that machine, so how dare they offer me something disguised as an update? This was extremely bad net etiquette, and I think Apple ought to be spanked for it. I talked to a few rabid Mac fanatic friends of mine, and they said things like, well, you know, they have to do things like that to compete with Microsoft. You know what? That's just not acceptable to me. We just can't be enraged when Microsoft does something underhanded, but not approvingly when Apple does something like this. I think Apple ought to be ashamed of themselves. What an awful thing to do. I put a screenshot of the update they offered me so you can see for yourself how misleading this thing actually was. Well, on that enraged little note, I think I'll wind up this exhausting week of podcasting. I really did have a ball and wouldn't have missed a single show. If you saw or heard any of these extra shows, send me a note at allison@podfeed.com and let me know what you thought. Hey, even if you didn't hear the shows, still let me know what you're thinking. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.